This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I am Tan Chung Han, and with me is Brian Fernandez, and you are tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, the show that is all about personal finance. So it's a new year, and that also probably means that many of you parents have just burned a bigger hole in your wallets after paying for your children's school fees. Now, financial comparison site iMoney.com has compiled a list of articles on the ballooning cost of education. So here to tell us more is Iris Lee, Head of Content at iMoney. Thanks for joining us, Iris, and Happy New Year. Good morning.
Hi, Happy New Year. Good morning.
All right. So you have compiled a list of the top 10 most expensive private and international schools here in Malaysia. Count us down then, or like just for fun. Like, what's okay. Who are the names on that list?
Okay, this is just based on most of these schools are within Klang Valley. Mm-hmm. So the cheapest in this list, in this top 10 list, is actually the international school in Desa Park City.
Okay.
That will cost you about 851,000 from you know, reception. Nursery reception, okay. And to all the way to year 13.
So how much does it cost, say, when you start your education then, and what's the cost of the last year?
The beginning nursery, which is about 3 years old, is about 37K. And then when you graduate, it's about 73K.
They better be serving some stellar baby food for 37K. Yeah. Good God. Okay, so that is the cheapest on your list, 851K from K to year 13. Okay,
yes,
number nine.
Number nine is Nexus International School in Putrajaya.
Okay, number eight.
That will cost you 944K.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, so it's getting nearer to the 1 mil.
Yeah, already, and we're only at number
yes,
nine. Okay.
Yes, and the number eight goes to Australian International School.
Okay.
That is in Seri Kembangan. Mm-hmm. So
right.
That's about 949,000.
Uh-huh.
And then we have St. Joseph Institution International School.
That's in Tropicana, right?
Yes. Mm. So this is actually under the Tropicana Group. It's relatively new. It just passed the 1 mil mark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
1 mil.
Yes.
Okay.
And,
yep.
And then we have IGB International School.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all past 1 mil already.
Wow. Okay.
And right. The top of the list now?
Top of the list, we have the top three. We have the Moncara International School. That's the most expensive.
Mm-hmm.
That will cost you a cool, let's see, a cool 1.3 million.
1.3 million
yes.
For one kid's education. So if this kid has siblings, yeah, you do the math then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously those numbers are mind-boggling, at least to most of us, I would think. But beyond just compiling all the fees that you find on the school's website, how much deeper did your survey go?
We actually visited a few of these schools to find out why they cost this much. Because today people are not that gullible where they just pay for no reason. They want
right.
to know what they are paying for.
Yeah.
So we went to a few schools like ISKR, we went to Garden International School, and we found out that it is a very different environment to most of the schools that even the mid-range to lower-range international schools, where most of the teachers and the faculties are expats. So and the syllabus are mostly American or UK syllabus. So that is what makes it so expensive. So and the facilities are, of course, state-of-the-art.
Mm.
So one of the things with and there's a very good mid-range, say between, say, 20,000 ringgit per annum to the 40,000 ringgit per annum. So there are quite a number of good quality schools. You have Help International, you have the Taylors Group, for example, you have 10B, you also have UCSI International. So what's the fundamental difference? Because I've been to, for example, the campuses for Help International in Puchong, and that's really, really good.
Yes. I think the difference is the students. The ratio of local and expat students, there are more local students there. So, of course, culturally, you still feel like you're in Malaysia. So if you want to experience a different culture, For example, you want to send your kid to the US when they graduate. So you want to start them early. So you want to put them in this environment where they feel like they're already there. They're mixing with people from that country. Yeah, so that is one of the differences.
Okay. Well, now, Iris, you're a parent. Brian, you are a parent as well. Full disclosure, I am not a parent. So when you see what's on offer, right, in the private and international school sector, is it really value for money? Or perhaps, you know, given those crazy price tags, at least crazy in my mind, 1.3 million ringgit per year, for the entire education per child, right? Are you paying for a lot of luster, for a lot of gloss, as opposed to, you know, perhaps some real substance? Because, say, can you quantify, you know, the return on investment on a cross-cultural, you know, or more exposure to cross-cultural influences?
I think it all boils down to affordability, but a lot of people are looking at it just at the fee point of view.
Right.
Of course, you go to public school, you don't have to pay fees, but you have to pay a lot more in terms of tuition and enrichment classes. So those, costs add up. But when you go to international schools, you already have those classes. You already have additional classes. You don't need to go for tuition classes and all that.
And Iris, I think that's a very, very good point, because for me, as you mentioned, Han, I sent my child to... I'm a parent. I sent my child to international school. Mm. I sent her to a mid-priced international school, UCSI International. And I took the advice of an international school teacher who used to teach in, I think, Garden International or Mount Kiara. And she said, go for a mid-price, and then they don't have the frills, but make sure the quality of the teachers is your determining factor. And then she said, everything else, just supplement. Because essentially then you will end up with a decent quality of education without having to spend so much money.
Yeah, and going back to the point about having a high ratio of expat teachers, on one hand, that lends itself tremendously to the cost. We recently on the Breakfast Grill had the regional chief education officer for GEMS Education, and he talks about how expat teachers, you know, are by and far the largest component to their operating costs. Now, on top of that, you have the relatively higher turnover rate for expat teachers versus, say, you know, local schools with local teachers, right? So does that factor into your, you know, your thinking, Brian or Iris, when thinking about sending your kids to these private or international schools? The quality of teaching and the consistency, right?
Yes, quality and consistency are both very important, because I wouldn't want my kid to keep changing teachers, halfway through the year. But there is also, it's not so much about expats or local teacher, is more about the way of teaching. So I have done some, just asking around parents who actually send their kids to international schools. Some actually send to lower range international schools. And they told me that the teachers there are actually from public schools. So the way they teach is very different from what a normal international school would teach the kids. So that actually makes a difference.
Well, folks, if you want to jump in on this conversation, you can always WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We want to hear about your experiences, or if you are sending your child, your children to either a private or international school, how do you justify the cost? Is there enough value add for you to part with, you know, anywhere from 800 plus to 1.3 million ringgit for one child's education?
Yeah, so coming back to what you said, Joyce, and that's Iris, and that's a very, very good point. The quality of teaching varies a lot. And so while selecting the school for my daughter, I think I went and physically visited about 10 schools, even went to the extent of sitting by the canteen to see how the teachers were interacting and the students were interacting, you find that the schools which have some expat teachers, I mean, in my daughter's school, for example, the majority of them are, in fact, expat teachers, but there are also quite a number of local teachers who have taught previously in international schools. So there is a very big difference in the standard of delivery and the quality of teaching between a local teacher that has taught in international school before and a local teacher that's just coming straight from a public school.
Right, and that assumes that their quality, again, is enough to offset the tremendous disparity in how much a parent spends. And because according to an HSBC survey, the average amount spent on a child's education is 110,000 ringgit versus, again, what the other numbers that you had mentioned in the past. We are going to take a short break, and coming up, we'll talk about the factors that parents have to take into consideration before sending a child to a private or international school. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense right here on BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me, Brian Fernandez, and you are tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. This morning, we're talking about the cost of an education at private and international schools. And with us is Iris Lee, head of content from the financial comparison website, iMoney. Now, folks, if you missed the first part, you can check out our podcast later. But essentially, we're talking or going through this list that iMoney compiled of the top 10 most expensive international schools here in Malaysia. We do want to hear about your experiences and how did you find that rationale to send your kids to these private and international schools, perhaps not the top tier ones or even the middle tier ones. We want to hear from you. You can send us a WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, Iris, let's talk about the factors that parents should take into consideration or perhaps avoid when it comes to, you know, them contemplating sending their kids to these kinds of schools. You came up with an article recently titled Four Mistakes Every Malaysian Parent Should Avoid When Planning Their Kids' College Fund. Summarize for us that article.
Okay. Before we go into the article, the factors that we need to consider before even considering international or public school are things like how many children do you have, whether you can sustain the long-term financial commitment of sending your kids to that school of your choice. And also another factor to consider is the education inflation, which is assumed at 5% per annum. So imagine every year your fee will increase by 5%.
Yeah, and I think I've heard of some schools that actually hike up their fees by double digits per year. Right.
But recently, there is a new rule that says that they cannot hike up more than 30%.
30?
So, yes, no, 30, that's still a lot.
Yes, that's still a lot. That is still a lot. So, yes, so we have to consider that. Now, what you see, the school fee structure may not be the same next year or the year after that. Mm. So, and also, the most important thing is, do your kids need it? So some kids, different kids learn differently. So they may want, they may need more one-on-one attention. So lower teacher-student ratio is important. So you may consider international school. But if your kids are picking up very fast, they may not need that. So so those are the factors that they need to consider when they are considering whether international or public.
And also one of the things with these international schools is there is a base fee. There's so many other costs that are related to sending your child to international school. So there's the trips, the expensive school bus, the technology costs that are associated. Those are all actually in small print.
Right, definitely. So that will add to the inflation, inflationary pressures when it comes to these school fees as well. Now, going back to the point that you mentioned, Iris, about whether or not your kids need it, because it's assumed, right, that, these private and international schools, because they charge a higher fee, that automatically translates to a higher quality education. But, you know, if you're asking the question, do your kids need it? Perhaps, you know, maybe not every kid needs that kind of education, right? Because I think in your personal experience, if we may share this on air, you have decided not to send your kid who's about to enter year one next year to private schools. Now, why is that?
Because I feel that it's good for him to experience public school first. If let's say he cannot cope and I find that he needs more one-on-one attention, then I consider international or private school.
So that's a pretty viable option, right? Yes. It at least helps save on costs. You know, it helps you perhaps get more used to more commonplace Malaysian culture as opposed to perhaps being in this bubble that's filled with a lot of expats, right?
Yes. And you're right, Han. You know, and on picking up on both your points, my daughter was a unique situation where she needed that personal attention. Mm-hmm. She needed a small class size. So we picked a school that literally the class was only 10 of them. So that was a very important factor. The also the thing that worries me as a parent when you send a child to international school is, are you disconnected from the masses?
Mm.
Are you living in a bubble, as Han, you pointed out, so that they grow up with a sense of entitlement and are caught in this unreality of living in Malaysia.
Right.
So one of the challenges, for example, is the fact that they don't speak Bahasa or Mandarin as well as, say, somebody who goes to private public school.
So once again, I go back to that breakfast grill that we did with GEMS Education, right? And he talks about, you know, and he concedes that there will be this dilution when it comes to your mastering of these various languages. On one hand, you've got Malaysian kids who are born, raised, and educated here in Malaysia who perhaps are not as fluent in Bahasa Malaysia because of the dilution that happens in these international school, international school settings, right? But the on the other hand, they then presumably have a stronger grasp of the English language because of their, you know, the teaching medium, the teaching is done in English, right? So how much does that weigh on those survey participants that you had?
I think it's not a neither nor thing because parents play an important part as well, parents and home environment. So even if you send your child to a public school, you can still make your kids English or Bahasa or Mandarin stronger by using the language at home and pushing for it more at home, because that is actually more important than the few hours spent in school.
Okay. Now, then wouldn't the flip side be true then? So you could send your kid to public schools and then, you know, still teach them about critical thinking skills, you know, because a lot of learning also happens outside of the classrooms, outside of the school settings though. So won't the opposite be true as well?
It is true, but it is a very idealistic way of looking at it. Not many parents have the time to do that, you see.
True.
Yeah. Iris, now can we address the issue in terms of some of the mistakes parents make when deciding to send their children to international school?
Some the mistakes that they send, that they make when they send.
Yeah, maybe not thinking through all the issues.
Not thinking long term. For example, if they send the child at 4 years old, there will be another like more like 15 years or 13 years for them to be in that school, for you to pay that fees that increase every year. So can you actually sustain that? Because it will be a very a major culture shock for them to take them out from international, put them in public school if later on you can't afford it. So, you know, as opposed to taking out from public school to international school. So, so you have to think about that because it will be very jarring for them. And then especially if, let's say, they are like just going into teenage years and it's very critical time for them. They are dealing with a lot of things, and then you take them out from international school, put them in public school where they can't speak the language properly. You know, so have to consider all this, not just from financial point of view.
You know, well, I'm a tutor as well, and one of my kids, after they graduate, kids being students, not biological kids, I actually heard that their parents actually sold off their home for the sole purpose of financing this kid's education in college. And you know, these are the kinds of stories that we hear. And very often the assumption is that Asian parents, they will not hold back when it comes to a kid's education though. So given that kind of bias, you know, does this mean an unending supply of students for these private and international schools because these parents want, and then I'm using air quotes here, the best education for their kids, no matter the cost?
I think we need to, I mean, there are both sides to the extremes. So some parents are very extreme. But I think the best way to look at it, the best that you can afford. That should be a healthier way to look at it.
Very important point.
And also it's affordability in terms of whether you're funding it now out of, or you're funding it out of asset sales or retirement money, for example.
Yeah, some people raise their EPF funds, right? Yeah, for that.
That is a very, very grave mistake. Because when you retire, you can't get a loan to fund your retirement. Yeah. But you can get a loan to fund your kids' study.
So what is it? Look after your own retirement first, then your kids?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's when you have a problem when you're old and your kids are not supporting you and you're depressed. And, you know, so that is a very, you know, a very big mistake parents tend to make.
Okay, with a few minutes that we have left, let's just address some of the WhatsApp comments that have come in. Folks, thank you so much for your messages. Do keep them coming. So, for example, we've got one WhatsApp comment, no name though. Parents who want their kids to learn math and science in English may feel forced to send them to international schools. Now, this seems applicable given the debacle that we're seeing with the DLP program, the dual language program, right? And, you know, does this weigh heavily on the parents' decision-making process?
Obviously, this parent.
Yeah.
Not on me.
Yeah?
Yeah, I feel that for science and maths, it's about concept. It's not about the language. Okay. So if you grasp the concept, you can explain the concept in English, Bahasa, Chinese. So that actually, you know, measure how much you understand the concept. Right. So of course, it will be tougher when you go to university and you have to, you know, learn it in a different language. But you know, it's not impossible.
So you don't mind the perceived flip-flop when it comes to the public schools' policies when it comes to, you know, teaching math and sciences?
I mind.
Yes,
I would prefer English, but of course, if I choose to go public school, these are some of the things that are not really within my control.
Mm.
I can voice out, I can suggest and all that, but it's really out of my control. So as a kid, as a parent, I must encourage my kid to adapt in whatever situation.
How about that? So practical.
Yeah,
this
very
Iris,
practical.
Iris Lee from iMoney. Okay, we got another WhatsApp comment saying that I send my child to international school. Standard not as good as expected, although better than public school. Not value for money. So perhaps a tinge of buyer's remorse there from this particular parent there. You know, so in that instance, at least for public school kids, you have the option of them moving on to private international schools, though. Have we seen instances of, you know, kids going the other way around? Where can you move from private or international schools back to the public schools? Is that an option?
Yes, it is an option. I've seen parents do that. They send to a low-range private or international school and they realize that they're paying so much but the quality is the same. So they decided to take the child out and put it in public school.
But can you go back to Sekolah Kebangsaan, though? I don't know. Parents, you tell me.
I think it would be tough for the child depending on the age. Yeah. I think Iris has pointed that out. If it's a relatively young child who's probably experienced it for a year, they can go back. But if they've gone through a international education for 6 or 7 years, I think that transition will be very turbulent.
Yeah, so it looks like it's just downstream from there, or rather upstream. Yeah, well, yeah, you figure out the metaphor. All right, well, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Iris Lee, Head of Content at iMoney, for speaking to us today about the costs related to the education at private and international schools. You've been listening to Ringgit & Sense. I'm Tan Chung Han and Brian Fernandez. We're handing it off over to Enterprise now, right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.